in the house of the Lord. Man, it seems like it's been 2 weeks since we was here. I just don't understand it. But I've got good news for you today. The good news is you don't have to listen to me this morning. If you were in Bible class this morning, you've already met John Miller, and you know who he is. And this is his lovely wife, Patty, sitting over here behind Miss Wanda. John has been preaching the gospel for more than 37 years. He got his degree in Bible from Lipscomb University and his master's degree in counseling from Marshall University in Huntington, West Virginia. But that's not important. He's been studying the Bible now for the last 37 years in preaching and teaching God's word. And I'm not going to spend any of his time up here reciting his resume. So with no further ado, I'll just give you John Miller.
Thank you, sir. I have not known Mike very long, but I like this man. Y'all have a great preacher, and I'm so pleased to know him. And I think the woman he's married to now is named Wanda. All right. And I think Tom's married to Barbara. Brenda. I had a cousin named Barbara and a sister named Brenda. Anyway, Patty says sometimes after I preach, I introduce myself to her. The passage that was read for us a few moments ago is one of the best known passages in the Bible, and I guess one of the best Bible stories of the Bible is the story of David and Goliath. But I believe a lot of times we've left that kind of in the Sunday school class. When I believe in reality that the Bible is a book for adults as well as children. And while it thrills the child to hear about a young boy killing a great giant, in reality you and I are faced by giants every single day of our life. And I believe there are great lessons in this passage for us as well. We're talking about in Bible class today about things that we're afraid of. There's a lot of things to be afraid of right now. I heard one person who has his kind of pulse on America today and what's going on with us as individuals, and he says probably there is less hope today and confidence in the future today than maybe ever in America. A number of studies and surveys have demonstrated people have a lot of fears. Well, this passage is one where everybody's afraid. If you notice, the very next verse where Tom quit reading, it mentions that Saul and all Israel heard the words of the Philistine, and they were dismayed and greatly afraid. They're afraid of this giant. But there's a young man. He's already been anointed king to take Saul's place, but the time isn't right yet. He's a son of Jesse named David. He's the younger of a large group of sons, I believe 7. 3 of them are old enough that they are there in the army with Saul. And Jesse gets worried about the boys and what's going on with them, and he prepares a special gift. A gift for their captains. And he asked David to go make a trip from where the sheep are and where Jesse is to where the boys are. Any of you that had loved ones in the service, you understand about that concern you naturally have. And so for David, he's there on an errand. But he's there when he hears this challenge from this monster, send me a man out and let me fight with him. And if I kill him, you all are our slaves. But if he kills me, then we're your slaves. The devil loves to be a bully. He loves to cower us down. He loves to scare us. Because the only way he can win is if we are scared, because our God is greater than anything the devil or any of his cohorts have to offer. And there was something about this young man. God has already picked him out in the chapter before as a man after his own heart. Now, he's just a boy, maybe 22 at the oldest, possibly 17. We don't know his age. But it mentions he's good looking. He's ruddy of complexion. He's a handsome child, but he's hardly anything to compare to this monster that comes and challenges the army. In reality, David has to face several challenges, and you and I have to face several challenges before we're really ready to kill our giant. There are mental challenges that come to us, mental giants that come to us first. And dealing with those fears will determine whether or not we're going to be able to stand up to the real challenge that we have in front of us. And I'd like to ask you to watch with me in Scripture. It's going to lay out the outline of my lesson. And one of the first things that you find that it says, as David begins coming there and hearing this challenge, and all of a sudden begins talking about it to some of the people, one of the first things that you find in verse 25 of this chapter, it says to him, "Have you seen the man who has come out?" It's one thing to say what you'll do when you're not in the situation. It's another thing to see what you do when you really face the situation. You remember the Apostle Peter, when Jesus began preparing them for what was going to happen at his death and his suffering, and how they would all deny him and hide from him. Peter said, "I will never deny you." Well, you know what happened. Three times before the rooster crowed, he had denied his Lord. I'm so glad I was introduced to the daughter and the daughter-in-law of Ira North. Ira North is where I got this statement originally. He used to tell us preacher boys, "You preacher boys, you get out there and you tell those parents how to raise those kids, because one of these days you'll have some and you won't know the answers either." And you know, I started out, I had a sermon, 10 commandments for raising kids. And then we had one. Wouldn't you know, it took after Patty's side of the house. So then the sermon was 10 suggestions for raising kids. And then they got teenagers. Are you shaking your head over here? You know what happened next. Now the sermon is, anybody got any suggestions? Have you seen the man? The Bible tells us he stands 6 cubits in a span. A cubit is as long as a man's longest finger to his elbow. Now the average man, that is about 18 inches. For me, it's about 22, but I'm all feet and mouth and arms anyway. That would be about 9 foot 9 inches, and that's how tall this stick is. Let me find some place I can stick the stick. I don't think it'll go up there on the platform, will it? Yeah, it might. It might go up there. Let me see. Let me ask you. Now, Rick did a great job leading singing. Let me ask you, if Rick was that tall and he got up there and said, "Now, let's all sing," would you sing? We'd sing, wouldn't we? This is a big old boy. Goliath was a real threat. Goliath was a real threat. He was not make-believe. He was not imaginary. He was real in every sense. Now, I'm about 6'1 and a half, and you can see how much more there is of him than me. David, I'm going to guess, was about like this. I don't know. But you can about see him come up to his belt buckle. "Hey, Goliath, I'll take you on." It's comical. It's silly. The Bible even goes ahead and describes this monster about his size and his weight. It mentions his coat of mail. His coat of mail weighs, in our numbers, 156 pounds. Now, that's his coat. The normal man's entire armor would weigh about 90 pounds to 60 pounds. If this guy just takes his coat off and throws it on me, 156 pounds, that's more than most you ladies will admit to weigh. His spear is described as a weaver's beam. And the head on that, he gets the weight of the head of his spear. What's a good throwing size spear for him? It weighs about 18 pounds, 12 ounces. Take a 20-pound bag of potatoes, take out 2 or 3. Lift that. Imagine that was the head of the spear. This guy is a monster. They've estimated his entire armor would weigh about 272 pounds. That's not his weight. That's his armor's weight. He's a true threat. He's a danger. He truly is. David, you've seen the man. Now does David recover from the very idea of looking at the man. Once again, look with me at the Bible, verse 26. And David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, "What shall be done for the man who kills the Philistine?" It takes away the reproach of Israel. What will be done for that man? What reward do you have promised? The New Testament says very clearly, "Be thou faithful unto death, and I will give you a crown of life." That's eternal life. That's everlasting life. That is never-ending life. What price would be too much to pay here in this sad veil of tears to be worth eternal life? He says, there's only one thing I need to do. Be faithful unto death, and I'll receive that price. But there are many more giants that David has to face. As you look ahead in verse 28, you find another one. But Eliab, his oldest brother, heard him speak to the men, and Eliab's anger was aroused against David, and he said, "Why did you come down here, and with whom did you leave those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and the insolence of your heart. You have come down to see the battle." David's first opponent is his own brother. Is that amazing? Not to me. It's not to me. I've worked with lots of families over lots of years, and I know that oftentimes your biggest opponent will be from your own household. In fact, Jesus even said that could be true if you were a Christian. Your enemies might be from your own household. I think I can explain psychologically why Eliab is jealous. He knows he's the one that ought to be out there facing the giant. He's had basic training. He's got a full armor set of armor and equipment. He's the one that ought to know how to take on that giant. And he's bigger than David anyway. Earlier said that back in the 16th chapter. He's tall. He's a handsome young man. And here's this ruddy kid coming along. He's going to do the giant killing. I remember working with a couple that they fought all the time. They did not know any way to be married without fighting. I taught them some anger management principles. I taught them how they could disengage, how they could use a white flag with each other. Because they didn't really mean to be tearing at each other constantly, and all those barbs, everything you get from all that, and all the things you said about her mother, and now you can't take it back, and all those things. And I was helping them learn how to adjust. He learned he needed to go running. Whenever he got upset with his wife, he'd go running. Or one man that every time he got upset with his wife, he went out and he had a pond out there in the field, and he threw a rock in that pond. Today the pond is solid rock. But the marriage is still together. So anyway, I was giving him cues like this. Uh-oh, I tore off my mic. Shouldn't have thrown the coat off. Is it working? It shouldn't be. I owe you for a mic, Rick. Maybe not. I don't know. We'll see. I got lost on that one. But anyway. This couple came in one day, and the woman was so surprised. She said, they had two teenage kids. She said, "Do you know, now that we're not fighting, our kids are trying to make us fight again?" That's what they had been comfortable with. They weren't comfortable with them getting along. And Eliab has a problem, you see. David's making him look bad. So he's got to try to discourage David. Sometimes I'll come someplace and somebody will say, "I want to talk to you, Brother Miller, after service." And they say, "Would you believe I was trying to become more involved in God's work and my own wife tried to stop me, or somebody in the church would say something to discourage me? Would you believe that?" Yes, I would. You're going to have to decide you're going to serve God whether anybody else does or not. You're going to have to decide to serve him because it's what you know he wants you to do. And that's what David has and Eliab doesn't have. And that's the first giant that you're going to have to handle in your life. If you're going to conquer your giants, you can't depend on anybody else but the Lord. Paul says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Well, he has many more challenges to face. I want you to notice how he handles this one, though. David replies back to him in verse 29. And David said, what have I done now? Is there not a cause? Eliab, have you forgotten why you're in the army? Have you forgotten who the enemy is? Do you not know somebody's got to go face this giant? Have we forgotten the cause? I believe that's one of the problems in the Lord's church today. I believe we've forgotten the cause. I believe we've turned religion into some kind of a very comfortable kind of thing for us, but it doesn't do much for Jesus. People hardly know the difference between whether we're a Christian or a non-Christian. We all act alike, talk alike, think alike, and we even worry alike. We're talking about that in Bible class. We need to get by that. We need to be like David here. He's going to stand up for God whether anybody else does or not. And we're going to have to resist the temptation to give in to discouragement because somebody's going to try to discourage you. If you try to do something right, somebody is going to try to discourage you. Somebody said that dogs don't bark at parked cars. But if you're moving, somebody's going to bark. Somebody's going to be against it if you bring it up in a business meeting, Tom. And it's going to be for one of these silly reasons we're going to run into here in the next little bit, more than likely. But if you look with me, then David does something wonderful. David says to him, is there not a cause? Look at verse 30. And then he turned from him toward another and said the same thing. And these people answered him as the first ones did. He got away from Eliab. Eliab was just going to keep raining on his parade. Now, Tom, I'm sure this has never happened. And Neely's been. Tom, you're not Tom. You're Mike. Mike, I'm sure this has never happened in Neely's been. But in some congregations, there's somebody there that sort of has spiritual acid indigestion. They're always upset about something. It doesn't matter, it may be a corn on their finger or whatever, but there's always something wrong with this person. And when you come and you talk to them, the first thing they're going to do is they're going to open up and they're just going to, Patty doesn't like to use this illustration, but I can't keep from it. They're just going to upchuck on you. They're just going to spill out all their sour and all of their sadness and all of their anger and all of their disappointment. And you're going to walk away feeling like, ugh. Now, I told you there's nobody like this at Neely Band. I already told you that, didn't I? But some churches have somebody like that in them. And you know what I do when I'm around those folks? Good morning, how are you? And I leave and I go over here and talk to somebody else. That's what David does. Don't stand around people that's raining on your parade. Find somebody that would encourage you and be around them. You see, you're responsible for your faith, just like you're responsible for your health. If you don't eat right, you're not going to be well. And if you don't feed your spirit properly, you're not going to be well. You hang around the negatives, you hang around the complainers, and you'll be one of them. But you get away from them, and you start trying to light other people's fire, and they'll start trying to light your fire, and together you will encourage one another. David handles this one just exactly right, and you've got to handle it this way, or you'll never be what you could be for the Lord. He leaves him. He goes somewhere else. But that's not the end of his problems. Look at verse 19. They tell Saul about him, and Saul sends messengers to David. I'm sorry, wrong chapter. Turn page. I got so carried away there, I got lost in place. Verse 32, when David comes to the king, he says to him, let no man's heart fail. Some of them are so scared they're apt to die of a heart attack right there on the line and never even get in the battle. We can have heart failure like that. we can do that. Don't do that. Look to God. Look to Jesus. Verse 33, more trouble. Saul said to David, you are not able to go up against this Philistine to fight with him, for you're a youth, and he's a man of war from his youth. David said to King Saul, your servant used to keep my father's sheep. A lion and a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And then it arose up against me, and I caught it by its beard and struck it and killed it. Now, I like to go deer hunting, but I don't do it with a stick and a rock. I've gone hog hunting just a little bit. I saw what they did to the ground. I saw what they did to some of the trees. I was out, first time I was ever hog hunting, I was out looking for hogs in southern West Virginia. I come across an old hog hunter out there. You kind of could smell it on him. And I was asking him questions about hog hunting. And finally I asked the important one, because I was hunting for meat. Are they good to eat? He said, they're nothing too special. Well, I decided that thing wasn't all that special, and he might like to eat me. I thought I'd go back deer hunting. But you can imagine this young man. He has already had the experience of facing down a lion and a bear with a stick and killing them. He has some evidence. He has some reason to think God will help him. He said, if God would deliver me from the paw of the lion, the paw of the bear, he'll deliver me from this pagan who has defied the armies of Israel. Let me ask you, has God ever got you on any tough spots yet? Do you have anything you can lean back on? Have you ever read one time in the Bible where God ever let his people down? Remember Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Our God is able to deliver us, but whether he chooses to deliver us or not, even so, King Nebuchadnezzar, we will not bow down to your image. Either way, they took their stand. Well, King Saul just all messed up. Well, if you're going to go out there and try to kill the giant, at least wear the king's armor. That's the stupidest thing you could possibly imagine. King Saul stood head and shoulders above all the rest of the soldiers. And he's putting all that armor on this kid? How dumb can he be? People will try to force you to do things their way. Years ago, I had a retired school teacher that taught me what charisma was. Relaxing and being yourself. It's the most powerful person you can be. You know, God could have made me handsome like Mike or Tom or one of those guys. He could have made me smart like them, but just made me dumb and ugly. But you see, when I do something dumb and ugly, God gets the glory. Because they know I couldn't have done it on my own. You see? God likes you just the way you are. He made you just as pretty as he wanted you to be. He made you just as smart as you want to be. Do you know there's not another person in the world just like you? They've got all this DNA evidence to demonstrate that, but you are unique. And he has a unique role for you to play in his kingdom, and nobody else has that role. Paul talks a lot about this, about the different parts of the body and things like that to the Corinthians and also the Romans about that. You have a special role, and if you don't play your role, that part will not be done. It'll be very hard for him to say to you, well done, good and faithful servant, if you haven't been faithful to your role. David does exactly the right thing with this stuff. He puts this on, and then I like it says, he tried to gird on the sword, and he tried to walk in this stuff, and he puts it off, and he says, I can't use this stuff. I have not learned how to. And then it says an unusual thing there. It says, and he sling within his hand. A sling was a military weapon in that time. One time the Benjaminites got off into homosexuality, and the rest of Israel decided they had to do something about it, but they were afraid to go and fight them because the Benjaminites could sling within a hair's breadth. One time I stood in the Brook of Elah. I was over in Israel with a bunch of other preachers, and they'd given us a royal treatment. They were wanting us to bring back lots of folks to Israel, and the trip changed my life. I never did take anybody back to Israel, but it sure changed my life. Sure blessed me in a lot of ways. And I was standing in the Brook Eloth, and we'd been given assignment as preachers to act out several of the Bible events, and one of them was David and Goliath. Steve Flatt was preaching in Madison at the time. He was David, and Jeffrey Sykes, who preaches art up in Springfield, I believe it is, he was Goliath. He was the smallest one of the group, and they acted out. And our guide was, we were told, the second best archaeologist in the country. And I went over to this lady, and I said, would you show me a rock like what David might have used for Goliath? Let me show you what she showed me. I carry this, keep this on my desk. You all see how big that thing is? I'll have to get it later. That thing, they didn't use a slingshot. They used a sling. I was holding a meeting up in Kentucky, and the local preacher took me out to a family where we were going to have dinner, and the little boy was on the porch. And Mama didn't have dinner ready, and he said, little boy, would you like to see a sling like David killed Goliath with? He said, I sure would. So he went back in the trunk. I'm glad we have no kids here because I don't want to have any broken glass or anything because of this. Y'all ought to be old enough to know better than this. But anyway, he had a tongue cut out of a high-top tennis shoe. The two strings, he had a hole punched in either end, had the strings on it like that. And so he had this little thing that made kind of like a little sling down here, and he looked down the road, picked up a rock, put it in that thing, went doo, 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 and turned it loose, and hit a hickory tree sitting about 20 yards out there in the field, knocked a piece of bark off of it. I said, let me see that thing. And so he said, how do you do this? He said, well, you load it all up, you get swinging around your head, and you think the time's right, you lift your finger up. I said, okay. He said, well, wait. What am I waiting for? We're going behind the house while you do it. I didn't hit the tree. But if you look at a rock that size, if that thing hit Goliath in the forehead, it'd have to kill him. It'd have to kill him. Come to think about it, David been out watching sheep. I used to watch cattle. But I always occupied myself with something. As I got old enough and I was allowed to, I'd take my BB gun with me. And we didn't shoot songbirds, but the other birds better watch out. Kind of where I grew up, every boy was an accomplished marksman because he had his BB gun. And he learned to pick birds off clotheslines and things like that, power lines out of distance. Well, David's day, sling was a very common weapon and ammunition was everywhere. What David does is not so surprising. Probably any of those other soldiers could have done it had they had the courage, had they had the faith. Now David's ready to go Goliath killing. He gets these five smooth stones. They say, well, the other five were four. Well, the other four, Goliath had four brothers, we understand. But anyway, he went down there with his sling. And now Goliath gets his turn at him. But after what he's put up with his brother, and after what he's put up with the king, and after the very sight of the man, Goliath's remarks just kind of roll off like water off a duck's back. I'm going to kill you, boy. I'm going to feed you to the birds. He says, Goliath, today, all of Israel will know. You come at me with sword and spear and javelin. I come to you in the name of the Lord. For the battle is the Lord's. And then, I love what it says next. And David ran toward him. Can you imagine us? You ever been to some of our business meetings? Oh, we can't do that. You ever listen to some of our prayers? I can about imagine some of us here winding up his, oh, dear Lord, bless this little band of disciples that meet here from time and to time. We are so weak and we are so small and we need your help so bad and we don't know what to do. David knew what to do. He's going to stand up for God. And when he wound up that sling and he let that rock go and hit that giant and he went down, everybody knows the giant went down. Everybody heard it. Everybody saw it. Up until then, everybody was scared to death but David. Up till then, everybody on the Goliath side was confident of victory. Till then. And they said, we better run. And the Israelites said, hey, look, they're running. Let's chase them. There's a great victory that day. Because one boy had the faith it took to do what God needed done. My question to you, do you have the faith to do what God needs done in your life? With your family? With your loved ones? Now, one reason David could do this was he knew he was on God's side. That was clear from way back yonder. God would never have chosen him to be the next king if he didn't have that matter settled completely. Some of us do not have that matter settled completely. We're still a little bit tempted by the devil and all the things that he has to offer. We're a little bit afraid of standing up for Jesus and maybe being shamed or imprisoned or talked bad about or thought less of by someone. David could only do what needed to be done once he is completely sold out to God. Our invitation song today is going to be sung in just a minute. And I'd like to ask you to search your heart and ask yourself, am I really on the Lord's side? If you need to be baptized, that's the first thing. Jesus said you had to do it. Now, I don't care who tells you you don't. Jesus said he who believes and is baptized shall be saved. And that's more important than what everybody else says in the world. That's the one standard that will be judged for your eternity on the day of judgment. Did you obey that? And then number two, did you live up to it? If you have not lived up to it, isn't it time? Doesn't everything about you tell you, don't you sense things coming to some kind of a major conclusion soon? At least your last visit to the doctor, did it not tell you that you're coming to a major conclusion soon? Without looking at what's going on in world affairs. Whose side are you on today? Are you somebody like Eliab who just kind of pretended to be a soldier for Jesus? Or are you one that's ready to stand up to the giant, whatever he is, knowing God will be there and he will make the difference? If we can help you in any way, won't you come while together we stand? Mike will be here to receive you.